The theory is that once the international tension has shifted, then Beijing will once again try to impose its ironclad control in Hong Kong.
Waiting for a potential backlash in Hong Kong. It's Thursday, June 20th. This is VOA Asia. Hi, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Australian euthanasia laws are enacted. We meet an immigrant chef on World Refugee Day. Understanding the plight of refugees, the right way to fight microbes, melting polar ice. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Hong Kong's decision to pause a controversial extradition proposal in the face of mass protests is a rare political embarrassment for China's Communist Party. But as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Hong Kong, many pro-democracy protesters in the semi-autonomous Chinese city fear a backlash from Beijing in the weeks ahead.
A handful of protesters camped outside Hong Kong's legislature days after millions took to the streets. Contemplating their next move, many wonder if Beijing will soon crack down.
Well, definitely. I'm afraid. But then we still have to keep going on. Because, you know, if we don't fight this time, don't fight for our freedom, then there might never be a chance again.
Hong Kong's decision to pause a reviled extradition bill was a major repudiation of Beijing's influence here, and a major win for activists like Joshua Wong, released this week from prison.
5 years ago, we claimed that we will be back, and we are back now.
Hong Kongers showed up to protest the bill in unprecedented numbers. But the toughest part may still be ahead.
I think the fear is that once the international tension has shifted, then Beijing will once again try to impose its ironclad control in Hong Kong.
The extradition proposal was widely seen as a clumsy, unforced error. But moving forward, Beijing may expand its influence in more subtle ways.
So, for example, influencing the elections, helping their proxies get elected, disqualifying opposition lawmakers, funding or encouraging newspapers which support their stance.
Many protesters say the only way forward is for Carrie Lam, the city's Beijing-friendly leader, to resign.
Some people will say, what's the point? If she steps down, you get another puppet by Beijing anyway. Well, yes, because of our undemocratic electoral system. But the fact of the matter is, the signal must go out to all the puppets. If you do something wrong, you have to go.
For now, protesting may be the only option.
Beijing need to pay the price for it. Whole generation of ordinary citizens already transformed it by Beijing to be dissidents.
And though the protests may eventually die down, for now, the anger remains. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Hong Kong.
These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Investigators name four suspects in Malaysian Air downing over Ukraine. China and Philippines to stay friends despite boat collision in disputed sea. South Korea donates rice and money to feed Hungary and North Korea. U.S. and China to resume trade talks ahead of Trump's Xi meeting. World Bank says China's Belt and Road can speed development and needs transparency. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and a whole lot more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our website. That's voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Australia's only euthanasia laws have come into force Wednesday in the state of Victoria. Eligible are residents over the age of 18 who are in intolerable pain with a terminal illness that will likely cause death within a year. The Catholic Church has, however, warned of a new and deeply troubling chapter of health care. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In the end, death will be swift for those patients in the state of Victoria, whose cases have been approved by doctors. An assisted dying kit will be delivered to their home, and a lethal drug is mixed and swallowed. Death would likely occur after about an hour, after the patient has become drowsy and become unconscious. Officials say the legislation has dozens of safeguards to prevent terminally ill people being pressured into ending their lives. The Victorian State Premier is Daniel Andrews.
This is about giving to Victorians who have a terminal illness and are in the terminal phase of that illness and have unbearable pain and suffering, the option, the dignified choice that should be theirs.
But critics say there's widespread opposition to euthanasia within Australia's medical and religious communities. In a letter, senior Catholic bishops said they couldn't cooperate with the facilitation of suicide, even when it seems motivated by empathy or kindness. Euthanasia laws have recently been rejected by other Australian states, but the Western Australian Parliament is expected to consider an assisted dying bill in August, while authorities in Queensland are exploring similar options. Ingrid Iflar, a lung cancer patient in New South Wales state, hopes legislation becomes nationwide.
Wish I could die, you know, and have it over and done with. I'm sick of my life. I'm just sitting down on the chair, looking out the door. If I do something, I get breathless. I'm not in a good way with doing things.
Australia's Northern Territory was the first jurisdiction in the world to explicitly legalise euthanasia in 1996. It was overturned by the federal government the following year. The legislation was in force for 9 months, during which time 4 people died by medically assisted suicide. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Elsewhere, some analysts say China and the Philippines will sustain a friendship of 3 years despite a risky mishap in a disputed sea because each side values the other for political or economic reasons. The Philippines receives investment and other aid from Beijing, while China sees strong ties with the Philippines as a way to stop Manila and more powerful allies such as the United States from impeding its maritime expansion. Antonio Contreras is a political scientist at De La Salle University in the Philippines.
President is very much pro-China. In fact, his statements are very much teasing China in a way. So at the level of relationships, I don't think it will change, at least at the policy level.
On June 9th, a Chinese fishing vessel hit a Filipino boat near the Reed Bank. Reports say the Chinese vessel left without helping 22 Filipino crew members who were thrown into the water. A Vietnamese boat nearby helped to save them. Although the Philippine Defense Secretary condemned the Chinese vessel for leaving the collision site without offering aid, President Duterte's office has taken a softer tone. Maria Ella Atienza, a political science professor at the University of the Philippines, says the boat mishap may rekindle opposition among the armed forces of the Philippines to Duterte's pro-China policies.
While the Philippine government is now trying to respond very diplomatically, there is an underlying debate. It shows that within the Philippine government, different officials are responding quite differently.
The Philippines and 4 other governments, all militarily weaker than China, contest parts of Beijing's claims to about 90% of the South China Sea. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for contributing this story. Happening now in Asia, South Korea has made a large donation of rice and money to North Korea to provide essential nutrition to millions of children and pregnant and nursing mothers. The World Food Program reports South Korea's donation, the biggest in more than a decade, will help ease a crisis faced by 2 million people. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. There are more than 25 million refugees worldwide, people who were forced to flee their countries because of war and persecution. There are another 70 million people who were forced from their homes due to persecution, rights abuses, conflict, and violence. World Refugee Day is today, and it focuses attention on their stories. VOA Asia's Skylar Ogden spoke with some about their lives after leaving their homes.
Majed Abdelrahim, known as Chef Majed, cooks Syrian food in Washington, D.C. The smell of spices reminds him of the shawarma houses in Damascus, but he probably will never go back.
I left Syria in 2013, February. I left to Jordan because my father and my mother, he told me, please leave Syria because Syria too much war and not safety.
Majed is one of 25 million refugees around the world. Another 70 million people have been forced from their homes because of persecution, rights abuses, conflict, and violence.
And the numbers that we're seeing in 2018 now are the highest we've ever seen.
Like the hundreds of thousands of Rohingya who were forced to leave Burma and flee into neighboring Bangladesh.
They put petrol and then burn your house. So what you do? You have to save your life. You don't have nothing. Your house burned down and you don't have nothing. So what should you do? If the government's against you, where you want to go?
Many languish in camps with no idea when or if they can return home. In the Americas, another mass exodus in Venezuela, where the political and economic conditions are extremely dire. And in Central America, a dramatic increase in gang violence in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador has fueled migration northward. Refugee officials say older conflicts in Africa and South Asia continue to aggravate the problem.
There are still people fleeing violence and persecution in Afghanistan and getting anywhere they can get to find safe ground and a measure of protection and safety so that they can begin to rebuild their lives and to get their lives and their families' lives back on track. Afghanistan is one example of a situation. There is still a situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo in Africa where there are parts of that country that are afflicted by very serious violence.
Refugees in the top host countries, including Uganda, Pakistan, and Turkey, live in harsh conditions, and their status is tenuous. Very few countries offer resettlement. The UN Refugee Agency says the U.S. remains one of the world's largest resettlement countries. This refugee, who asked not to be identified, says he has no plans to return to his homeland.
I would be scared to go back to Yemen. For me, as a gay man, it's just not a place for me I want to be at. It is illegal to be gay in Yemen. The penalty for that is death, actually.
In December, the United Nations adopted the Global Compact on Refugees to strengthen the global response to the refugee problem.
Refugees are never asking just for handouts. They're asking for a hand up so they can rebuild their own lives.
That's exactly what Chef Majed has done in America.
In 2017, February, I moved to D.C. to work, and I live in Maryland with my family. My life now, my plan, I am here in America. I want work here in America and I complete my life here in America. But I want make good future for my family.
For VOA News, I'm Skylar Ogden.
More on World Refugee Day coming up. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news from VOA Asia, regional analysts say China and the Philippines will sustain years of friendship despite a risky mishap in the disputed sea because each side values the other for political or economic reasons. The Philippines receives investment and other aid. Beijing sees Manila as a buffer against U.S. interests as well as others. Visit VOA Asia Facebook to read more. See and share. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, The number of refugees allowed into the United States is being reduced by the Trump administration. A grassroots movement to help the public better understand refugees is growing in the nation's capital. VOA's Jun So caught up with a woman who is a driving force behind the movement called One Journey. Carol Pearson narrates her story.
In the midst of a historic global refugee crisis, with nearly 69 million people forcibly displaced worldwide, Wendy Chan wanted to tell the human stories behind the mass exodus.
Many organizations are trying to tell the refugee story through numbers, but not a lot of them are reaching hearts and minds using really positive and celebratory tone, because amidst all these hardship, I think it's really important for us to showcase the incredible story of resilience and hope that refugees exhibited.
One Journey's inaugural festival took place last June on the grounds of the National Cathedral in Washington. Chan and her co-founder, Vonda Berninger, brought refugee dancers, musicians, and poets from all over the nation. 4,000 attended last year's festival. This year, partnering with 200 nonprofit organizations, local artists and businesses, and big global corporations, Chan expects more than 8,000 attendees. An important part of the festival is innovative digital technology.
We have Share Studio that was set up, these digital portal where participants of the festival can connect and learn about the refugee stories directly from refugees who are sitting on the other side of the portal, who are still living at, you know, camps around the world.
We just went into the Digital Connect Lab. It was absolutely important and meaningful to my kids as they sat there and listened to what the men in there were experiencing. You could tell that they really wanted to understand the challenges they'd lived through and wanted to know how they might be able to help.
Chan was born in China and came to the U.S. with her family at age 12. She learned firsthand how important it is to support refugees.
My great-grandfather was a political prisoner who died in a political prison, you know, at the age of 78. And my grandfather fled China during the Civil War as a refugee. To me, it's a very important that we all realize that refugees have no choice. They simply were born in the wrong place and wrong time of history.
Chan's enthusiasm was not unnoticed. Recently, she received Washington, D.C. Mayor's Volunteer Service Award.
I'm deeply honored to receive that award, but I wanted to make sure that we all know One Journey is truly a grassroots movement.
Chan, an executive at a global consulting firm, feels she has won life's lottery.
That I've been able to come to this country and live a really enriched life, a life that allows me to fulfill my full potential. And as someone who feels so blessed, who is so blessed in life, I just feel that I'm obligated to give them a hand.
For producer Jun So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
This news from VOA Asia, a Dutch-led international team investigating the shooting down of a Malaysian Airlines passenger jet over Ukraine in 2014, has named three Russians and a Ukrainian as murder suspects. Russia may not cooperate, however, as it has denied any involvement in the downing of the plane. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the World Health Organization is launching a new tool to reduce the spread of antimicrobial resistance. The WHO says its global campaign is aimed at making decision and policymakers aware of the appropriate and effective use of antibiotics for specific infections. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva at the launch of the WHO's so-called AWARE campaign.
Antimicrobial resistance is growing because of the widespread abuse and misuse of antibiotics. The World Health Organization considers antimicrobial resistance one of the most urgent health risks in the world. It warns a century of medical progress will be undone without accelerated action to contain rising resistance by making antibiotic use safer and more effective. WHO Assistant Director General for Access to Medicines, Mariangela Simao, says pneumonia kills many children in developing countries because they do not get appropriate medication.
More than almost 1 million deaths in developing countries is due to treatable bacterial diseases, which can, in most cases, be linked to the lack of access to antibiotics or to wrong diagnostics or to wrong prescription. So we, by launching this tool, WHO aims at narrowing the gap between excess use and access.
The tool developed by the WHO is based on the WHO Essential Medicines List. The list specifies which antibiotics to use for the most common and serious infections and those which should be available at all times in the healthcare system. WHO Assistant Director General for Antimicrobial Resistance, Hanan Balki, says the Essential Medicines List also indicates those antibiotics that must be used sparingly and as a last resort.
We expect that the list will actually be a legitimate reference for healthcare providers who would like to understand the better ways of prescribing antibiotics, and that following these guidelines will actually help them in having a system of how they would prescribe antibiotics and have it based on a legitimate resource, which is the WHO.
The World Health Organization notes no significant investments are being made in the development of new antibiotics. Therefore, it says improving the use of existing antibiotics is critical to curb the further spread of antimicrobial resistance. It says the new guidelines will help prescribers and health workers select the right antibiotic for the right infection, thereby protecting endangered antibiotics. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The European Space Agency is using satellite imagery to document the status of ice flows around the world, from Greenland to Antarctica. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us the images illustrate just how quickly the world's ice is turning into water.
The frozen water parts of the planet have a name, the cryosphere. And for the past few decades, the European Space Agency has been using satellites, like Sentinels 2 and 3, to gauge the status of the cryosphere. The news isn't good.
The last century, we've seen quite dramatic changes in these different elements of the cryosphere. Notably, we've seen significant losses in Arctic sea ice. We've seen decline in the volume of ice locked up in glaciers. And we've also been witnessing changes in the large ice sheets, Greenland and Antarctica. The consequence, of course, is that sea level is rising as water is transferred from ice on land into the ocean.
The red parts of this image show ice loss in Greenland. This is the Brunt Ice Shelf in Antarctica. And this imagery shows the retreat of the Columbia Glacier in Alaska. The disappearance of the cryosphere has all kinds of implications for humanity.
Glaciers have a huge impact on the population on Earth, particularly in Southeast Asia, where millions of people are dependent on mountain water resources.
And a recent study suggests Earth's glaciers are losing 369 billion tons of snow and ice annually.
During the summer season, we see the melting of the glacier and the mountain snowpack. This, of course, releases water, which is used for irrigation in the fields. It's used for generating hydroelectric power, and it's also used for drinking water. And so we're very much concerned with how climate warming has an impact on the seasonal stream flow and the way in which the water resource can be managed in the future.
During the past 50 years, the same study found that the world has lost 9.6 trillion metric tons of its icy covering. And as the ice melts, it reflects less of the sun's heat, which can lead to a runaway melting process. Scientists hope these images could help educate politicians who are drafting policies to fight climate change. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
There's some great video along with this story that you may see on our website, voanews.com. And that's true for many of the stories that you hear right here on VOA Asia. As for audio, you can find us on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. And you can also find us on another Facebook page, Facebook VOA Burmese. For all of our friends in Myanmar who have listened to our program today, we thank you for listening. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Keith Holmes, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.